All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I get to be the host today. And we're going to be talking about veteran suicide, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what is causing it and maybe what we can do. So we've got a little group discussion going on here. My guests include the Reverend Bob Bull, is an Air Force veteran, and I got Nick McBrien, who's a U.S. Army medical veteran. He served in OEF and OIF. Bob was in the Air Force in Vietnam. We're going to get to them in just a second. But the idea here is that we want you to participate. We can have all kinds of experts on to talk about how we can prevent suicide and so on and so forth. But it really comes down to, you know, the grassroots, you know, the grunts and everything else that we always talk about that are on the ground. Maybe we can figure out how we can come up with maybe some suggestions, or maybe you know someone who's in a crisis situation. We have some, hopefully we have some suggestions for you. And we'll see how it goes. So the number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. So if you know somebody that's in crisis situation, you might want to give us a call, because we've got some, as I say, we've got some suggestions for you. If you know somebody right now, get a hold of them, dial 988. That's the magic number nowadays. It don't have the long, you know, suicide crisis lines that you have to go through all kinds of links to get to the right people. Just go to 988 and they'll help you out right away. All across the country, counselors available to you 24 hours a day. So I encourage you to look for that. Before we get into the program, actually, we got to pay the bills around here, as they say. So I need to thank our sponsors. And, you know, over the last 20 years, we've had one sponsor that has survived the entire 20 years, and that is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. I encourage you to give Legal Help a call. That's 800-693-4800, or you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, you can go to their website, that's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. If you're a veteran-owned business and you want to do business with the federal government and many corporations, you need to be certified as a real live veteran-owned business. These are the folks who can help you get that certification. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We also want to thank our local veteran service organizations who helped us get on the air in the first place back in November of 2003. And that would be the Irwin Prescott and American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. All right, so that gets the business part of the program out of the way. I want to introduce my guests today. I'm going to start off with the elderly gentleman, the Reverend Bob Bull. Bob, as I had mentioned, was a Vietnam Air Force veteran. He is a peer support specialist. He's a service officer for the same VVA 310. He's part of BCAT 9. Does everything I think you think of. He's a veteran's friend in our local area. So, Bob, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. I really appreciate your having me on. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's real quickly get a little bit of your background. What did you do in the Air Force?
I was an air cargo specialist. Nothing special. Just
a specialist.
Just a specialist, yeah. And then after, I think, 3.5 years, I decided to go into security. Just something different. So I put in my 5 years, 3 months, and 4 days and got out.
Yeah, who counted?
That was back in 73.
Okay, good for that. And from there, where'd you go? You transitioned, it said.
Oh, I went back to work at Detroit Diesel in Redford, Michigan, where I was a mechanic. And that's what I did. I got to work in the training center. And so I learned how to be a teacher. And when I retired from Detroit Diesel in 97, I went to work at Wayne County Community College as a teacher there for 5 years.
Okay. All right. The other gentleman that's joining us today is Nick McBrien, and Nick was a U.S. Army medic in OEF and OIF. Nick, welcome to Veterans Radio. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, thank you, Dale. So my name's Nick. I was in the Army from 2009 to 2014. I served with both 2nd Cav and 10th Mountain as a medic. Before ETSing, I was awarded an ARCOM and also the Combat Medic Badge, which I wear heavy to this day. I do take my service. I'm 100% retired. And so it was a great life, and I'm glad to be out after that. I transitioned. I'm helping out with Warrior and Caregiver United and the Essential Patriot here in Michigan. And I'm on the board for both. And I'm just happy to be able to give back and save one more.
That's the goal here, folks, is to save as many as we can. We were talking before we went on the air and trying to get some numbers out there. You know, we're all familiar with the number 22 as being the number of veterans approximately who commit suicide on a daily basis. I thought I was reading something where that number had dropped a little bit, but it looks like is it going back up again?
Dale, you have to watch out for the number, because we found out that certain organizations have some weight in deciding as to how that number is actually decided, i.e. a certain veteran that just recently died at the VA. So, you know, we can't really believe, trust, or utilize that data simply because that's what they feed us. I know it sounds kind of, you know, disparaging, if you will, but all I know is that we can't trust the data at all. So we work on the premise that one is too many, and it doesn't matter whether it's 22 or 25 or 28 or 30. We know that we have a lot of work cut out, and that's how we attack it.
Nick, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. The number is always something that's ultimately up to debate. We know that based off our information that we received from the Veterans Affairs is that we saw about 6,200 per year veteran suicides. We don't know how accurate that is. We don't know the report. That's just the information that we have.
Yeah.
So we always revert back to just save one more. Let's try and reduce to zero. Let's approach zero as quickly as possible. And let's talk about the means and mechanics and also the prevention that we can help leverage and improve the quality of life for our veterans and also longevity too.
Yeah. I mean, that would be wonderful if we could do that. One of my questions in kind of researching what was going on is, you know, we're trying to get people in to go to the VA, you know, go to the VA, you can get your medical care and so forth. And the numbers are, which you guys just pointed out, Bobby, you just said what, 23% of Michigan veterans utilize the VA?
Yeah, the 23% are getting benefits or drawing benefits from the VA. That's it in Michigan.
How many veterans do we have in Michigan?
Roughly about 570 plus thousand.
23%. That's crazy.
Yep. Yes, it is.
I mean, I can't say it's crazy, because I mean, I didn't utilize the VA health system until 2008.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. And in my story, it was 2010. It was the same thing. It's just, it was a matter of having to then, because I had no choice. Yep.
Yeah, you had mentioned that as you were getting ready to retire that you suddenly lost your medical benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nice job. I don't know. Chris, Nick, do you use the VA for your health care?
Yeah, I actually got really lucky. So when I got out of the Army, first thing I did was I went to a VFW. And it was kind of a weird culture shock, you know, getting out of the Army, seeing a bunch of veterans that have been out for, you know, as long as I've been alive and longer.
Right.
And there was one gentleman that was there, and he just said, hey, you know what you're doing tomorrow is you're hanging out with me. And he got me in front of one of our county veteran service officers and enrolled in benefits. It did take about 3 years before I started receiving the benefits. However, I'm just glad that that whole process is done. I got rated at 100%, and he made sure that I got on the track well. And that's been a great blessing for my family and I, knowing that, a lot of my veterans that have gotten out, a lot of the service members that I have, former platoon and company personnel. 23 is, that's a very liberal number. I would expect with the Vietnam veterans that we're still seeing probably close to 16%. OIF, OEF is a little bit better with around 1 in 3.
Well, the problem, of course, is that the VA health centers are, spread out all across the country, and some are, especially in the middle of the country, the Nebraskas and Kansases and all that stuff, where there's hundreds of miles between VA centers, and it's hard to get them to go to these things. But I'm trying to figure out how we can get them to these centers, or at least get them to seek help. We're going to be talking about it all day. Go see somebody, talk to them. You mentioned that you went into a VFW hall. Now, that's different from the Vietnam era veterans, is we couldn't even go into the VFW hall. They wouldn't talk to us.
Right.
And I think probably, the transition getting out of the service I'm really happy to have Nick here to talk about it. And on this level is that, did they give you any sort of transitioning training or suggestions as you were on your way out the door?
That's a very interesting question. So I was exposed to an IED on my way out. And so transition was through, a massive head injury. So, we always joke, it's like, oh, well, what information did they give you? I was like, I'm surprised they got my name right. we're seeing a change in culture. However, the majority of it is still retention. Our ETS process is to scare the heck out of a veteran, so this way they reenlist. The Army is always hurting for numbers and it always needs more. I've never heard the Army say we need less. So it's always just been the same process. Don't leave, stay here. You won't make it.
Oh, okay. So they didn't give you any encouragement at all when you got out, or no classes on what to do once you got out the door?
Department of Labor did get involved. However, just because somebody from the Department of Labor did get involved, that 4-hour class, what the shape of a resume is and what the shape of 8x11 paper is, doesn't mean that you're ready for the job market,
right,
or transition, or how to translate your MOS into civilian work.
I was reading somewhere where it said about 6 years after you get out of the service to kind of make that real final transition and get to work. Because many people get out of the service, maybe they hadn't been to college before, so they got to go through college. They got, they got to make these decisions on, they got majors to make a decision on. They got to, am I going to go for a grad degree? What are my benefits? How much can I get? Do I have enough money to take care of this? And so they figure that you're not really settled for 6 years. I've been out for a lot longer than that. I don't feel settled yet. So I'm just thinking about how they came up with these numbers. So let's see if we can talk a little bit about what we can do to help these veterans. And Bob, I asked you on the program originally because I really wanted to promote the 988 number. And why don't you go with that for a minute?
Well, the 988 has become an initiative now, rather than just a number. It's we think it's a way, it's a pathway to getting veterans the help that they need. It's a simple number now. It's only 3 digits. It's not the 10 digits that it used to be. It's easy to remember, but still we only have 23% of the people in this country, I'm sorry, 17% of the people in this country that know what that number is. I mean, I was at a Yellow Ribbon event today over at one of the armories, and even those people that just come back from a deployment, many of them did not know what I was talking about with that 988 initiative. So we have a lot of work to do. I know we're working with the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency and with MSHDA and with the MDHHS, which is Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, to try and get this information out there. But it's amazing how this number has been around for almost 2 years, July of 22, and yet so few people actually know what it is, how they can. I had one person say, so how do I call them? And I said, well, you just dial 988. Well, punch 988 or push 988. But it's scary that that there's been so little that's available on this number and how important it is to the lives of not only our veterans, but also our children and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, in my case, how important it is to them to know that there's somebody out there that, one, isn't going to know them, two, isn't going to tattle on them, and three, isn't going to write anything down on them so that they can be safe to talk to somebody, anybody, anytime. It's another nice thing, anytime, 24/7.
Well, I know you've been working with trying to get, public service vehicles to have have those numbers on the, on the side of the thing, because it, got all the other numbers on there. Why not put something that could actually help some people?
Yep.
How is that working? Or are you running into roadblocks with that?
Well, so far, the American Legion, the VFW, and the VBA, Vietnam Veterans, have all passed the resolutions that we sent through. And they're going to the state convention this summer. And if passed by those three service organizations, then the legislative bodies from those service organizations will send that up to the state, asking the state police to put it on all of their patrol cars. We're also working with several county sheriff's departments right now, but if there's 83 counties, 84 counties in the state, we've got a lot of work ahead of us. We're trying to get them to put it on their cars too. Some departments don't feel that it warrants being on their cars right now. One department, I said, "Are you kidding me? Do you mean you need more suicides before you put it on your car?" But when they've got three or four cars, it's not much. But that's the kind of pushback we're getting right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm wondering across the country. The 988 is a nationwide number. It's not just local for all, those of you that are listening to us out in California and, mm-hmm. and Minnesota and even downtown Detroit, this 988 number is really important.
Yes, it is.
And it's kind of the first step for many people. And again, you guys can jump in here anytime, but I know that, we have to figure out if somebody's contemplating suicide, depending on who they are, I guess if they, some of them will do something right away and other ones will kind of think about it. But if we can get them to, punch that number in while they're thinking about it, maybe somebody can convince them not to do
it. There's a lot of material out there, Dale. But basically what we try to do is we try to get the family members and the people that are associated with them to be the eyes and ears. They're the ones that notice when somebody changes, when there's a change in their demeanor, when there's a change in the way they do things today as opposed to yesterday. If they've been agitated for all this time and all of a sudden they're calm that day, that usually means that they've made a decision. They've got a plan going. These are the kinds of things that a family member or a close personal friend could notice and say, "I need to get some help for this guy. I need to get the help for this girl." All of this leading to the fact that none of us is going to be able to catch all of it. All of us can.
Yeah, I like that. I like that statement there. Nick, I know, since you are the most recent out of this service and your numbers for your generation are just outrageous. And I'm sure that you have had friends who have committed suicide.
Yeah, recently as well. We're seeing it across the board in my age demographic for the OIF, OEF, and we're the majority. And the majority of our increase is in our female population. We have a 284% increase just based on VA numbers for 2021, female suicides by firearms, which is atypical of women. So we're seeing people take more serious matters. And we know that most, like, one in three suicides are 2 weeks after a financial emergency, that we can mitigate a lot of the financial emergencies. Every state has trust funds for veterans. Everyone's entitled to a VA compensation hearing claim and making sure that they get connected with the county VSOs, their veteran service officers, to make sure they get that process started. Yeah. It doesn't take 3 years like it used to. It's months, 3-4 months. We can find temporary housing for people. We are getting a lot better at this, and we're seeing a lot more small initiatives get involved. Mm-hmm. For example, we're in the process of standing a small 501c3 up here in Ottawa County. Brad Dorland is really taking the front on that. Make sure if you can get involved. But he's looking for transitional housing for those emergencies where the veteran makes too much money but is in an awkward stance where he can't return home and needs housing, or the bureaucracies are falling short. And that's fine. The bureaucracies have their importance. We're just filling in the gaps as we go to plug as many as we can. So if we can limit, you know, that $1,000 emergency, that 2 week period where after that disruptive event that we can prevent 1/3 of suicide, that's approximately 2,000 veterans saved a year. So just making sure, just getting them into the VA for those claims through their Veterans County office, we could save a lot of lives there.
I know that the local county service officer here in Washtenaw County in Michigan has an emergency funds that they can help with. And I know that the Michigan Trust has you have to qualify for it, but has funding that they can do. And I know, Bob, you were involved in trying to get transitional housing built in a local community. Ran into a few roadblocks with that, didn't you?
Well, one of the problems is, of course, it doesn't fit. Whatever we're trying to put together doesn't fit. I just found out today that one of the organizations, Fallen and Wounded Soldiers Fund, that they were told that they had to move because the community didn't want them there anymore. And they were in, I think, Canton or in, I can't remember exactly where they were, but they're moving to Ann Arbor because the community there didn't want them there. I guess there was an incident with one of the homes. And so they had to move. But regardless of that, the transitional housing is an important part, especially the 60 and 90 days. If we can get a veteran into something short term, then chances are we can get them into HUDVASH, or we can get them into one of the other VA programs that will help them. The thing is that some of those programs take, I think, it was, well, I can't remember exactly who said it, but up to 30 to 90 days is usually what it takes, depending on the program, to get them in the system. So if we can find some place for them, we're actively looking. The VA, I just talked to a lady over at the VA, and they're working on things like that. I told them if I could get an extra $5 to $6 million, I could probably buy a motel. No, serious. There's a motel that's available, I think, for $5.5 million that we could house 30 or 40 veterans. It's something like that. I know that's a lot of money, but when you think that the building is already there, the apartments are already there, everything's there. If we looked at something like that, we could definitely take a dent out of that kind of problem. Plus, they're in a good transportable area. They're usually on a highway or a main thoroughfare. So transportation, which has always been an issue for veterans, could be lessened. And usually they're in within a municipality area where they can get to groceries and they can get to banking and all those other things, which makes their lives much easier.
Yeah, you just mentioned something, and I was looking at it this morning. It's called, where did it go? The Sergeant, Staff Sergeant Parker Gordon Fox Suicide Prevention Grants.
Uh-huh.
And, it said Congress has authorized $174 million to be, hold on, I gotta move my screen here just a second here. Appropriated to carry out the community-based grant program that provide resources to community organizations serving certain veterans and their families across the country. Organizations can apply for grants up to $750,000. Not too shabby.
Nope, not at all.
This is on the VA website.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're getting kind of off track here. But the idea of we're trying to figure out how we can get these men and women to, you know, reach out for help. And, you know, what can we do as civilians? I was looking again on the VA website. They've got a thing called SAVE training. Have you mm-hmm. heard of that?
I've been to that course. Yeah.
Well, good. You can, you can fill it in. Because
I don't remember a lot about it. I had to take it as a kind of a presumptive for my job. Ideally, and I can't even remember the acronym for it anymore.
I got it right here for you, Bob.
Okay.
Okay. So SAVE is know the signs that the indicated veteran might be thinking about suicide. And both of you mentioned this. That was a sense of hopelessness,
yep.
feeling that there's no way out.
Yep.
Anxiety, agitation, sleeplessness, mood swings, feeling like there's no reason to live, rage or anger.
Mm-hmm.
Engaging in risky activities without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lot of people I knew 50
yeah.
years ago. Increased alcohol or drug use and withdrawing from friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
The A in the SAVE was, how do we ask that most important question? Are you thinking
yep.
of killing yourself?
Yep. Yep.
Or doing harm? It says, you know, Do ask the question if you've identified any of those warning signs. It says, do ask the question in such a way that's natural and flows into the conversation. Don't ask the question as though you're looking for a no. You're thinking of killing yourself, are you? Don't wait for to ask the question until they're halfway out the door.
Yeah.
The V is to validate the veteran's experience. Talk openly about the suicide potential. Be willing to listen, allow the veteran to express their feelings and make supportive, encouraging comments. Recognize the situation is serious and don't pass judgment.
Right.
These are hard for some of us to do. I know.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And the E is for encourage treatment and expedite getting help.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a friend that says, don't keep the veteran's suicidal behavior a secret and don't leave them alone. Try to get him to call 988, 911, whatever it takes. That's the message that we're trying to convey to our listeners today here on Veterans Radio. We are talking with Bob Bull and Nick McBrien, just to try and let whoever is out there listening today, wherever you are, if you know somebody that you think is in a crisis mode, see if you can get them to get some help. Ask them some questions. See, you know, if you can see the change in behavior, don't be afraid. I think that's the term I'm trying to use because, you know, don't be afraid. Oh, I might upset him. Well, obviously he or she is already upset about wow. something. And if you see these signs going there, you need to take action. We have constantly talked about, you know, when we were on active duty that we had each other's backs. And I think we have to take the lead in this battle that we're in again to have the backs of all of our
yeah.
fellow veterans that are out there, you know, yeah. suffering from whatever it might be. And, you know, cause sometimes, you know, we don't take them serious enough.
Two most important things, Dale. Okay. One, that we're willing to listen, and one, that we show that we care. If we can do those two things, then we create an avenue. We create a guidepost. We create a place where somebody can come to us and talk to us, can come to you and talk to you. or to Nick or anybody like that if they just show that they're willing to talk and that they care. You know, they're willing to listen and care. That starts the conversation.
Nick, how do you feel? What can we do?
What we can do is start getting involved again, especially this post-COVID lifestyle. I know a lot of us have reduced our, you know, our in-person interactions. We need to start getting back out there and seeing each other face-to-face. A phone call doesn't suffice for recognizing when people are going through a hard time. Body language is most of our communication. And we need to be able to see how they're behaving, how people are behaving. These are your friends and family, your brother and sisters in arms. You need to be in person with them. You can't sit back. You can't take a back seat to your relationships. Not only are you their safety net, they're your safety net too. You're more like, statistically speaking, as a veteran, you're more likely to die from suicide than a stroke. And if you take your health seriously and you're exercising every day, then you need to have a good safety net too. So, I mean, if you're taking stroke medications, then you need to be in person with people too, because just like with a stroke, you don't see your face slouch. You don't see the changes in your behavior. You just end up having a suicidal ideation or a stroke. Mm-hmm. And they're about equal for our demographic. And we need to take this as seriously as we take medications for stroke and heart disease.
One of the things that I started, and Dale's very familiar with it, is a mobile unit. It's been on the road almost 2 years now. And we get to go out to different places. We get to go to them, to gun shows and car shows and the U of M home games and any place where we can go, where we can set up and we can talk. And in that way, they control the beginning of the conversation, because they come to us at these events, and they start the conversation, or at least they get some point where they ask for help and we can direct them. I find myself more as a switchboard operator than anything else, in that I can direct them to some place that's safe, somebody that's going to listen, someone who cares, somebody has the resources, maybe it's somebody who has the time. So.
Well, I agree, and I know, Bob, that you're doing a great job at seeing that van all over the place, which is, I'm trying to think of, you know, because I see these veterans on a corner somewhere with a sign saying, you know, disabled veteran, you know, which of course, and I don't like to be skeptical, but it's what are you doing on the corner kind of thing. If you're disabled and you're, you know, one guy's had 100% disabled. I'm going, what? You know, you've got a little bit of money coming in every month. What are you doing out here? But, you know, maybe we need, you know, to address those people. And I think the idea, Bob, of what you're saying is to just be there at events that, you know, maybe veterans will be. That doesn't necessarily have to be a veteran planned event, but like a car show, or, you know, and I know you go around and do all kinds of things like that where there's just some veteran say, hey, you need to talk. Here's a car here. Call this person or this group and see what you do. And I wanted to get back to Nick real quickly, because I wanted to let him do a little promotion here for Waco, for Warriors and Caregivers. I mean, just because it's not just a veteran that's going through some of these, you know, issues, you know, the whole family is affected by these things, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, our slogan is save one more. You know, we talk about, you know, suicide doesn't actually impact the person that committed suicide. It impacts the people that survive more. That's just the reality of it. We don't want you going. We need you on our team. We need you here. So whoever needs to hear that, I'm glad you got to hear it. But as Warrior and Caregiver United, we're incredibly blessed to have John Kingsinger and Stephanie Hall as great leaders. And we're in the process of expanding statewide. Just like in our name, the name of the game is Caregiver and Veteran Warriors United. And it's not just the VA certified caregivers. It's everyone that fills that need and that gap of that safety net. So it could be a brother, a sister, a good neighbor, a guy down the street, you know, whomever it is. And, you know, traditionally the American Legion, the VFW, they are a great fit for us veterans, veterans and veterans alone. Right. We're trying to plug that gap. And I love both those organizations. They've done so much for me. This just allows us to create that circle and get it a lot tighter and bring them into the auxiliaries as well. So we're in the process of making sure that we can connect the family and the community back to the veteran. Retransitioning back into service, from service back into civilian life, it's hard. And, you know, everyone's always trying to do the empathy portion of, like, what would it be like to go to war? And I try to explain it to them. Like, I couldn't imagine the stress of going to college right out of high school. I needed to go to war force first before I could reacclimate myself to an educational system. And that always gets a good position from them. You know, I couldn't imagine have the stress of just going right to college.
Good thinking. Not quite the same, but pretty close as far as anxiety is concerned.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just a different way of looking at it. And we're, as Warrior and Caregiver United, we're looking to just fully encompass everyone, pull them in together, and make sure that we get the change to save one more.
You know, Dale, I know that this is veteran radio, but I also want to touch base on the other demographic that's so important to us, okay? And that's our children. We see a suicide rate, and we don't know all the numbers yet, but we know that there are children as young as 6 years old that are taking their own lives. And a lot of it, we believe, has to do with social media. And we're hoping that we can do something with that. Samsung, some other organizations have ideas and programs, and we're going to be working with a few organizations to try to put together some public service announcements that can be run on social media over and over and over again, where most of the young people are. And so, again, going to them with whatever we can do to tell them about the 988, to tell them about where they can get help at the VA, to tell them about where they can go to locally to get some help right now. They don't have to wait. So these are some of the other things. But yeah, I understand wholeheartedly the suicide. I lost a granddaughter to suicide, so I understand that very well. And so we have to be cognizant of our families too.
I think, you know, we've touched upon a lot of issues today, and I know we haven't solved all the problems at all. We just want to remind our audiences to keep an eye out on your friends, your family, if you're veterans, your fellow veterans. As Nick pointed out, you know, we got to get out there and talk to them again in person, you know, one-on-one. It doesn't, you know, making phone calls saying, you know, hi, how are you, isn't necessarily going to work. And I would encourage you to go to the VA website and look up suicide prevention. You can do, anybody out there can do this. You don't have to be a veteran to go to va.gov. And they have a little questionnaire, you know, a little microscope type of thing up at the top. And you just type in suicide prevention, and all this information that I've talked about and that we've talked about today is available to you, and what the signs are that you could use, what you can, you know, what you want to look out for in your veteran or in your friends. If you see these things, how to act. And that's that 988 number again. If you see something, do something. Don't let them, you know, poo-poo it away and say, well, no, it's nothing. Say, no, I'm fine. It's serious. You know, meanwhile, they're, you know, abusing their body with, you know, what, you know, alcohol or drugs or hermits, you know, they live in the basement all day. You know, we've got to figure out how to help these men and women. So I would encourage you that was one of the websites that I found that was really actually had some really great information in there. It also defines some of the issues that some of these men and women are dealing with.
You know, Dale, yes. Is it possible that you could put my email on your website?
Sure.
Okay. If anybody who's listening would go to the website for Veteran Radio, and if they want a 988, if they want a copy of the 988 Shield, a digital copy, if they send me an email, I will send them the digital. They can put it in their car. They can take it to the doctor's and dentist's office. They can get it into the schools. They can take it to their church, whatever. The more visibility, the better, because we have a better chance of reaching people if we can do that. And I will be more than happy to send that digital to anybody.
Can you give your email right now? Because
I can do that.
Listen.
I can do that.
All right.
It is the ARK, that is THEARK, dot Ypsilanti. For those of you that can't spell Ypsilanti, it's YPSILANTI at gmail.com.
All right. We will add that to our website later this evening. So it's on there, and I encourage people to do that. Also, we're going to have a link to the Warriors and Caregivers United on our website. So there's all kinds of things that we're trying to do to help, and we encourage all of you out there to do the best that you can. I unfortunately have another segment I need to go through, so I want to thank Bob and Nick for being on the program, and I think something we need to talk about more, obviously.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
Thanks, guys, for being on the program today, and we'll be in touch quickly.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great one. God bless.
God bless you all.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a real quick break here for our Medal of Honor segment. When we come back, we're going to be going into our NBBDC Veteran Business of the Month. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back after the interview.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
PFC Raymond Clausen, a helicopter mechanic, volunteered to participate in a rescue mission. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
The Marine platoon had been trapped in a minefield outside of Da Nang. One Marine was already dead and 11 wounded. It was Clausen's helicopter that had inserted the Marines, and the crew felt responsible for getting them out. He leaned out the side door to determine where mines had already exploded to help the choppers land. Then he jumped out and moved toward one of the wounded. As enemy fire bracketed him, he picked up the man, carried him to the helicopter, and returned for a second Marine. Clausen made 6 trips into the minefield, saving 18 Marines. Only when he was sure that all were safely aboard did he signal the pilot to lift off and leave the combat zone. President Nixon presented him the Medal of Honor on June 15, 1971, shaking his hand and saying, "Well done, Marine."
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest among us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. If you know a veteran in crisis, don't wait, reach out. Call the Veterans Crisis Line at 988, then press 1. 988, press 1. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Welcome, I am Jim Fossone, and this is a Veterans Radio Spotlight on the National Veteran Business Development Council, best known as NVBDC.org. Veterans Radio America, a nonprofit, has a partnership with NVBDC, which is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses of all size. It is also a 501c3 nonprofit established in 2013. It addresses the growing need to identify and certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses for the commercial or corporate marketplace and for the government. It administers a rigorous certification process designed to withstand the scrutiny of corporate entities seeking to utilize veteran-owned businesses. And we want to welcome one of those businesses here to Veterans Radio. So we're speaking with Julie Dwyer, who is the president of Express Yourself Promotional Products down in beautiful North Carolina, and a Navy veteran. Julie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Well, you spent 20 years in the Navy. How did a nice girl like you get talked into a naval career?
Well, 21 plus years. I served in the Navy for 21 plus years and just had the time of my life. I went from Detroit, Michigan into the Navy after high school.
And talk to us a little bit about some of the assignments that you had over that long career.
Well, first, I retired as a senior chief aviation warfare, surface warfare, yeoman. My years of the sea duty out of the 21. I was on five ships, three of them aircraft carriers. I traveled around the entire world. I was part of the repair team for the attack on the USS Stark back in 1987. So that was pretty significant. Was one of the first women to go on into a combat zone within the Navy to repair that ship. I served primarily on the West Coast and primarily on shore duty with flagstaffs. And then when I was on shipboard within the captain's office. So I got to know pretty much majority of the crew and be able to help them out and the services that we did provide from the admin department.
Well, you live the slogan, join the world, join the Navy, see the world. You got a chance to do that over such a long career.
Yes.
You got out, though, and interestingly, settled in North Carolina and started a business career. I should mention along the way, after getting out of the Metro Detroit area, you picked up your Associates of Arts degree from the University of Alaska in Anchorage and your Bachelor's of Arts degree from the National University in San Diego, California. But why a business career after you got out of the Navy?
Well, I had no intention of really retiring when I did. I had to come home to take care of my mother, who became paralyzed from a back surgery. So I was on my way to Brussels, and then so I had to make the difficult decision to retire instead. As far as my business, there in 1998, before I left the service, I was stationed in San Diego. I went to an entrepreneur expo in Del Mar. And there they were showcasing numerous businesses that you could have. And one of them was the promotional products business. And so I was pretty interested in that. I bought into it while I was still in the Navy. And as a matter of fact, my first customers were on the aircraft carrier Nimitz. I would sell the squadrons their T-shirts, ball caps, pins, challenge coins, all their reenlistment memorabilia. So that was pretty fun. I was a nervous wreck doing it because, of course, trying to run the ship, the office at the same time, working on providing promotional products from abroad. But that's where I got my feet wet in this business.
And there's an important lesson right there, right? Start small, see if you like it. Hey, if it works, maybe it'll grow. And you know what? Maybe it'll hang around for a while. And this has hung around for another 22 years or plus. So yes. it really did grow into something. But tell us why along the way you decided, hey, I think it makes sense for me to become a certified veteran-owned business, and why you turned to NVBDC.
Well, as you know, probably as a veteran, that while you're in uniform, your uniform reflects on your trust level, your capabilities, what sets you apart from, the other people in the military, because you wear your ribbons and everything else, and people kind of get a window into your, who you are, integrity wise and such. So when I retired from the Navy, I just assumed everybody, they knew I was a veteran. They'd provide me contract opportunities as a veteran, and unknowing how important the actual certification process was. The assumption kind of hurt me for a while, for a few years. And then I met up with a woman named Annette, who pretty much I shadowed her, and she pretty much showed me the importance of certifications. And the NVBDC certification was has been extremely important and valuable to us ever since we did receive it. We picked up quite a few corporate clients. And but the thing is, the certification doesn't stand on its own. You obviously have to be who you say you are. Be definitely be able to deliver and deliver right the first time every time, like we did back in the military. So a lot of those skill sets transferred over, and thus it only made sense to really pursue this certification with the NVBDC.
And they try to go out of their way, I think, to help companies, big and small, yes, get corporate opportunities, get networking opportunities. Would you consider yourself a big company or a little company?
I'm a small business that has been very successful. At one time, someone had warned me to say, you know, if this really takes off and you're, you know, because through the procurement events, the meet and greets and, you know, just getting yourself in front of these corporate buyers and these government buyers, there's going to be a time where it's going to be like you're drinking from a fire hose. And that certainly happened, and it happened quite rapidly. So I just can't help but be very grateful for the skill set that I acquired while in the military that I transferred over into my small business.
Yeah, I think we all learn how to drink out of a fire hose in the military.
yes, but when it comes fast, you know, and it is so very important to get these certifications, whatever category that you could qualify for. But the veteran on the SDVOSP certification, like I said, has been paramount to quite a few corporate accounts that we have. People are very, very excited about working with a veteran-owned business.
That was Jim Falzone talking with our Veteran Businesswoman of the Month for NVBDC. You can see how this all works. It's a great opportunity for you if you are a veteran to contact NVBDC. I think you'll find that they're very helpful. They've got all kinds of programs that can help you get your business going or keep it going or helping it grow. Joining me on the line right now, as I mentioned earlier in today's program, I had the opportunity last night to go to a fundraiser for Fisher House, Michigan. And joining me on the line right now is the executive director of Fisher House, Michigan, and that is Kate Melcher. Kate, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much, Dale. It's great to be here, and it was wonderful to see you at the event last night. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. So can you kind of tell us, I mean, most of us all know what Fisher House is all about, but this was your big fundraiser for the year, wasn't it?
That's right. We had folks from all over the state of Michigan and beyond that joined us. Folks are just so excited about having a second Fisher House here in the state, because you may not know how busy the Ann Arbor Fisher House has been. That Fisher House has hosted nearly 10,000 individuals since it opened only in June of 2020. So our state really, really is ready for another Fisher House.
Right. And that one's going to be in Detroit.
Correct. It's on Woodward, just a couple blocks north of the Boulevard, and ironically, it's near the Fisher Building, different Fisher family, but we'll now have two Fisher buildings, a Fisher Building and a Fisher House right in the same neighborhood in Detroit.
So when is that one planned to be open?
Well, it's under construction presently, and weather gets a vote, but I think a conservative estimate would be that construction would complete around September time frame, and I hope the VA would be able to welcome their first guest by about Christmas time.
Oh, that would be terrific. And you had some great people at last night's soiree at what I call it, at the War Memorial in which shores was that?
We were in Grosse Pointe, and the War Memorial is just a stunning building, a stunning venue, and, you know, steeped in history, and I encourage you to visit there for an event or just for a tour. But, you know, we really had a star-studded evening. The woman who sang the national anthem is a retired Air Force technical sergeant, and she just blew the doors off the building. It was incredible. But really, you know, the feature of the night is we had Medal of Honor recipient Doc McLuhan with us last night. Mm-hmm. And as a medic in Vietnam, you know, he was able to really tie the mission together. You know, he was able to, you know, to save dozens of men, and we get to save thousands every year with your help. I appreciate it.
That's right. And so this is kind of a pitch to our listening audience right now. If you want to help out the Fisher House and make a donation, how would they go about doing that?
Visit us at fisherhousemichigan.org and follow us on socials to stay in touch.
There you go. See, I learned my lesson last night. I never saw so many bids on things in my whole life. It was quite an adventure for me. So, Kate, I want to thank you very much for taking time out. You need to rest today, I'm sure. And we'll be talking to you soon. So thanks very much. Kate Melcher from the Fisher House, Michigan. And they were very successful last night. I don't know how much they raised. I'm not going to ask. I just know it was a lot, which is cool. So, all right. So next week, coming up on Veterans Radio, we're going to be having Rebecca Grant will be on. Rebecca Grant, as you know, is our foreign affairs expert extraordinaire, and she's going to be talking with us about what's going on in the Middle East, in Russia, in Ukraine, in China, and every place else. So I encourage you to tune in for that program. We're excited always when we get a chance to talk to Dr. Grant. The other thing, of course, is we'd like to thank you for your support of Veterans Radio, and that if you'd like to help us out, just need to go to our website, veteransradio.org, click on the donate button, and we can keep this program going for a lot longer. So until next week, this is Dale Thornberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio. And stretch it out for 2 seconds. You are dismissed.